RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you have found a podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, which has discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. This particular week, we are covering another two episodes, which in fact are...
We are going to look at Season 1, Episode 13, called Betrayal, and Episode 14, called The Odyssey. So there were a lot of things going on in these episodes. So
these are not really briefs that you're going to read us here. These are going to be kind of like longs, I guess.
I was thinking boxers, but...
Okay. All right. Bob and Weave.
So for episode 13, Betrayal, it originally aired on February 6th, 2013. So what happened here, now that Oliver knows that Moira is aware of that book with the names from the list that he found out last episode, he and Diggle, they're arguing about how much that she might be involved. And this leads Diggle to start keeping an eye on Moira, and he even recorded a conversation between her and Malcolm Merlin. Now, then also there's a violent criminal named Cyrus Vanch. He gets released from prison, and he wants to take over the Triad. But when the Hood tries to find out more about him, Vanch realizes that he can kidnap Laurel in order to kind of trap and catch the vigilante there. So Oliver seeks out Detective Lance to help him out, and they do end up rescuing Laurel, but now she's a little upset with her father for using her as bait to catch the Hood. So the episode ends when the Hood confronts Moira and tells her that she has failed this city.
Oh, that was chilling.
That was a good little cliffhanger for that episode. So
both these episodes, I think, have had really good endings to them too. So
yes, yeah, they're very, very dramatic. I was by the end of it, I couldn't believe it was over. But so in the next episode, episode 14, The Odyssey, originally aired on February 14th of 2013, starts right off where that last one ended with the Hood in Moira's office, and she's begging him not to hurt her because she loves her family so much. She doesn't want to have their mother taken away from them. And, you know, he's starting to believe her a little bit when she draws a gun real quick and shoots him right in the shoulder. So he does escape. But he is injured, so he reveals himself to Felicity Smoke, and he asks her to take him to the Arrow Cave, although he didn't call it the Arrow Cave, but, as Diggle and Felicity try to save Oliver's life, we keep seeing flashbacks to the island where he's working with Slade Wilson to infiltrate Fire's camp, and so they can escape on a plane, a supply plane that's scheduled to come to the island. But once they find out where it's coming and where it's going to be, Oliver refuses to leave without Yao Fei. Because he saved his life. So that's when we learn why Yao Fei is working for Fire, because it appears that his daughter is being held captive.
Oh, very interesting.
A lot of stuff going on in these two episodes.
I got to say, I was very pleased that Moira's bullets didn't have curare on them, so that at least Oliver, he was just shot. He wasn't poisoned as well.
Yeah. So at least not with curare, you know. Right. They might have been... maybe like lemon scented or something. I don't know
that she'd be using those kind of bullets either, but okay.
Well, she's rich. She likes the expensive bullets. So.
Oh, I gotcha. So, well, we've got, right before we go into the news here, we've got one, I don't really want to call it a correction. It was just kind of an oversight from our last week's show. We've talked about the Bratva, and we've seen these, I think we've only seen like two people who work on it. This is the Russian mob that, you know, happens to be in Starling City. Because, like, everybody's represented in Starling City. You got the Triad, you got the mob, the regular mob, the Italian mob, and you've got the Russian mob. The leader of that mob is, let me see if I can pronounce this, is Anatoly Nayev. Nayev? Anyway.
That was, it sounded almost perfect. I thought you were from Moscow there for a second.
Yeah. So it's maybe Robin Williams, Moscow on the Hudson. But anyway, that was the name that the head of the Bratva was given on the show. And I hadn't even thought to Google that name because, of course, I couldn't probably spell it, let alone pronounce it. But that is the code name for a character called the KG Beast, who is mostly a Batman villain in the DC Comics universe. But he's an assassin and, you know, from a top secret KGB military group and everything like that. And so he has shown up, I guess since the late 80s was when he made his debut and everything like that. So not that we necessarily will find out that information about him, but I like what they're doing, the fact that just names, you know, normal people names or names of characters that we see could potentially lead them to be some other character at some point, or some hero or villain or something. So I guess we'll have to start keeping an eye out on those things as well.
And it's starting to feel like just about every character in the show has some sort of even just minor connection to the comics somehow. So they have really, really tied this up with a lot of the DC universe.
I was going to say, except for one, we'll talk about here in the discussion topics. But let me finish up with the news here. On February 11th, Arrow got renewed for its second season on the CW. So that's great news. So it makes me feel like this is actually worth it to do the podcast, since I hate starting on something and then realize, oh, well, it's only going to go one season and they're just going to end it, you know? So, yeah.
I'm glad, because if people are starting to get excited like I did and am even more, then it's totally worth it. So,
yeah. And then the next day we found out that Emily Bett Rickards, who plays Felicity Smoke, she was signed on to actually be a series regular in season two. So
even bigger woohoo.
I know. Well, especially after seeing her in these episodes, you know, it's like, wow, she's really coming into her own as a character on the show. So that's great. So she'll join Oliver and Diggle and Oliver's family and Laurel and Detective Lance as series regulars now. So she gets her name above the title. It's probably a pay raise for her, I would guess, and everything like that.
Let's hope so.
All right. Well, let's get talking about these episodes here. So we usually start with the first appearances, characters that have notable first appearances. And we've got three this week, one from Betrayal. Though he had more screen time actually in The Odyssey, and the other two, I'm sorry, I take that back. The second one was also from Betrayal, and then third one from The Odyssey only. So first off is Slade Wilson, who is played by Manu Bennett. Gladiator?
On Spartacus.
Yeah. Gladiator, Spartacus. It's something on HBO, right? Or Showtime, or
something that's a very adult show with lots of violence and adult situations.
And he's kind of short too, but he's very wiry. The Slade Wilson is the alter ego of Deathstroke. So what's weird now is we've seen a guy dressed up like Deathstroke, who we've been calling Deathstroke, but we probably were mistaken there. That's not Deathstroke. We're Slade Wilson. That's who we should be referring to as Deathstroke. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I agree. And when I first saw him, well, we can get into this, but I thought maybe that they were trying to pull another fast one on Oliver there. But then it got even more confusing when I found out the truth.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're going to discuss that a little bit more about everything that's going on with Slade and Oliver, because that's all in the island flashbacks. In Betrayal, in the present day part in Starling City, we are introduced to Cyrus Vance, as you mentioned, and that's played by David Anders, who fans may remember from such shows as Alias. He was the I think he was the Russian operative on that. I can't remember. Of course, I can't remember the characters' names that he played. But then he was also on Heroes for I think the second season. He was super-powered guy on that as well. So yeah. He's very familiar to he's got a very familiar face in terms of like sci-fi and fantasy shows. And now Cyrus Vance, so it sounds like this is a great name, right? This sounds like, oh, this is, he's right out of the comic books, right?
Yeah, well, I racked my brain saying, where have I seen him?
Well, when I look up, when I Google Cyrus Vance, I think he's like, I think he was the head of naval intelligence for the Bush administration or something like that, or the Carter administration. It was some, you know, real person. So I started, well, maybe they kind of mixed names in the DC universe, and it's like, I can't find anyone named Cyrus Vance. There's Cyrus Gold, who is Solomon Grundy, but there's no one that has the last name Vance, V-A-N-C-H, in the DC universe. So pretty much a new character. Really interesting. Like you said, he's kind of looking to fill the power vacuum left by the triad heads being killed by the Huntress and Bertinelli being taken to jail from that, from the Huntress arc. So you know, he gets out of prison. I think it was like a technicality because Laurel's trying to get him to, you know, get put back because she can't believe they would release this guy because he's so dangerous. And, you know, he just kind of goes out and starts trying to take over. So,
I can tell you, I'm very glad that my real estate agent wasn't as persistent as Cyrus Vance in getting me a house, because he just went in there and took the first one he had, killed the guy that was living there, and took over the house. So,
yeah. Well, I think that was his lawyer that had worked for him, too. So it's just like, yeah, yep. You know, that's a, well, you're a lawyer, you make some good money. That's a nice place to live in.
Yeah, that first scene there really set up what kind of a psychopath he was. So just killed him right off while he was giving him a hug. So
yeah, get him in close with a knife and just did some work on him. So then the third first appearance of a character is Shadow, which is S-H-A-D-O, no W, played by Selena Jade. And this is a great opening. We only see her for, I don't know, what would you say, like maybe 30 seconds at the end of the second episode here of The Odyssey. Yeah. But Shadow has a big part in the, since the 1980s in the Green Arrow mythology. And she is also a bowmaster of a kind. I think she also works in the comics, at least. She works for the Yakuza, which is the Japanese mafia. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, where we go with this, because there were some surprises since she is the daughter of Yao Fei.
Mm.
All sorts of cool stuff going on.
Another big revelation there.
Oh, yeah. It's one, and there's even another piece of a revelation that goes on with that I want to talk about here further down the discussion. But first off, let's talk about betrayal. As we've talked about in previous podcasts, the title of the episode is very applicable to the themes and subject matter for that particular episode. So betrayal is about, obviously, humor. No, it's about it's about betrayal. And so all sorts of people betraying everybody else. Starting out, I think that Moira has big betrayal on her, and she's lied to Oliver about a lot of different things that he doesn't even know about. But then, as we found out on the end of the previous episode, she has a copy of the list that Felicity presented to Oliver, that she got from Walter, that he got from Moira. So that really gets Oliver's wheels spinning. Like you said, it the episode ends with him showing up in her office saying that she's betrayed the city. So, I mean, we kind of see this character kind of going back and forth, the Moira character. It seems like she gets some good footing in 1 week with Oliver, and then the next week he finds out something else that really upsets him.
Yeah, I can't get a good handle on Moira. At the very first part of the series, she seemed like a pretty bad person, you know, somebody that you couldn't trust, didn't show much emotion. And then, you know, another show will come on and she'll be very emotional about her family and her daughter and about worrying about Oliver. And then you'll see her again. And I mean, she's a very, she has two kind of sides, you know, that I still can't figure out what's the real Moira in there.
Now, do you think there's just inconsistency with the writing, or are they just trying to show us different characterizations as we go through the different episodes? And because she kind of seems to, you know, she's working with Malcolm Merlyn and the whatever the shadow group is behind the scenes. And when we see her working with them, you know, it's often, at least I feel, it's like, oh, yeah, she's really bad. I mean, look, she's working with this guy, and they're trying to, you know, bring down the city or whatever. They're the people that the list rails against. These are, the, you know, because these people are on the list, but at
right.
least Malcolm and Moira are so high up that they weren't known to Robert Queen when he wrote the list. It's just more the underlings and everything like that, so...
Yeah, maybe. And yeah, I can't figure it out. And I'm not sure why, you know, Moira and Malcolm wouldn't be on the list unless, you know, they helped Robert to make the list. I'm not sure. But, you know, I had a thought, and we don't have to get into this too much because it certainly wasn't a big part of either one of these episodes or anything. But do you remember in the pilot when Oliver came back from the island mm-hmm. and they had this maid, this Russian maid
yeah.
who... You remember her?
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Oliver.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And she seemed to be like somebody that Oliver could trust and talk to. And it seemed like maybe that was going to be kind of his mother figure, you know. Mm. And oh, Moira yeah. was kind of this really
cold and
dark
distant
character. Yeah, exactly. Cold and distant. Yeah. But I don't think she's been on since the
no, I think
suspect in.
Right.
And I think it might have been this episode. I'm having a hard time remembering because it was really like a half a second. But I saw a maid walk out of a scene in an episode. And it got me remembering about that Russian maid. So I'm wondering – and again, this isn't about the story so much as the writing because you mentioned that. I'm wondering if maybe the writers decided, well, let's take this, you know, this maid character out and let's try to make Moira more of the motherly figure. And, you know, that gives her a lot. That gives that character a lot more diversity where they can kind of play around with her sort of black and white sides there. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think that's a great idea. I mean, that probably is it. Also, the fact that pilots are often done so far in advance, they try to add some different, you know, levels of characterization and stuff in there. And they probably thought it was cool for them to have a maid and, you know, that she would have missed Oliver. But when it came, you know, when they got picked up for having a show, it was probably, like you say, they decided, well, you know, we don't really need to continue with that character. We want to, you know, have this really this core group, and let's just stick to the family, the different family groups. You've got the Lance yeah. family, the Merlin family, which we didn't know how big that family was at the time. It was really just Tommy, and then the Queen family. So,
yeah, either that or at the end, we're going to find out that the maid is behind all of this.
Oh, yeah. Okay, folks, you heard it here first. That's Josh. You're going to go on record with that.
I will. I will take full responsibility for that prediction.
Okay, good. As long as you can do that. Well, there was a part where Moira mentioned in this episode about the list, though. She said it was Robert's book of people who owed him favors. So, you know, and then she's like, but you know, stop asking so many questions. She tosses it in the fire, and it's like, oh man, just stop. Oh, come on. It's but you know, Oliver still got his copy, but. We know that he's
I'm surprised he let that go so fast, but
yeah,
he does seem very blinded when it comes to his family.
And that, yeah. And that is something that, we see throughout, these episodes. I think there's, you know, he doesn't want to, he doesn't want to believe, and we've seen, and again, we've seen this in previous episodes, he just doesn't want to believe that his mom is that bad. Diggle is, you know, telling him, you know, it's like, she knew about this, that means that she's not completely clean, and Oliver's, you know, his excuse for that is, well, she's my mom. It's like, I don't care, you know, I don't care if she's your mom or not. She knows about the list. There's some involvement here. You can't deny that. And so, you know, like you said in the brief at the beginning, you know, Diggle's following her, and Oliver's just getting totally PO'd at that. It's like,
well, he's doing the exact same thing that that Diggle did with Ted Gaynor. You know, he doesn't want to believe it, and Diggle's telling him the same thing. Look, I know she's your mom, but there's something going on here. So
no, there's not. It's like, all right. And then at the end of the episode, it's like, now do you believe it? And it's like, fine, I'll go talk to her. It's like, hey, mom, you failed the city. So
kind of wish you just said it like that now.
That'd be fun. So we've also got there's some betrayals, not as much, I think, but Tommy and Laurel obviously have a lot of other history going on. because Oliver is talking about the advice that Tommy should be taking for, you know, to his dad. And he's basically saying, well, you know, you got to give him a break. He's your dad and everything like that. And it's this, it's the same advice that Oliver should be taking in regards to his mother. You know, it kind of goes back to that trust but verify discussion we were having the other week. And it's, you know, Laurel has the same kind of thing going with her father because he's using her to get to the vigilante by putting her in harm's way, which, you know, turns out really bad because she gets kidnapped and nearly killed if it weren't for Arrow, you know, coming in and saving the day at the last minute.
Yeah, well, and Tommy gets mad at Laurel because she leaves. She tells Tommy she has to leave, and she's leaving to go meet the Hood, and doesn't tell Tommy that's where she's going.
Oh, that's right. She said she's got work.
She's working, yeah. And when he finds out, he finds out about that, and he gets overly mad at her, I think. I'm like, I mean, I guess maybe he was worried about her being in danger. Or, I'm not entirely sure why he got so upset at her, but he was really mad. So
he does seem to be – he's very protective of her now that they kind of are an item. And she does, and I think – I can't remember if Laurel actually mentions this or if Tommy's mentioning this to Oliver. But I just have a note here that somebody says that she has a track record of being attracted to dangerous people. And you know, and Detective Lance feels this obviously as well because he, you know, and he's kind of blinded by hate in the whole thing. He's just, he's kind of betraying his whole family because it's, he's going after the Hood. Laurel's just been shot at and, you know, she's like, how could you do this? You know, and everything, you know, you put me in harm's way. And instead of saying, I'm sorry, or, you know, I apologize for that. He's like, can I have the phone back? you know, and that's what really like estranges them so much, you know, from each other. I mean, because she keeps getting her in trouble.
He's got some issues with his loyalties, I guess, maybe, or maybe just trying to decide what's right. You know, I think he really wants to catch the vigilante because he feels like it's what Oliver's doing is not, it's not right. You know, I mean, he's not following the law, but he's also torn with, you know, his daughter dying, and he's just got so many emotions going on there that, and he keeps going back and forth. So, and I think Laurel is kind of aware that he's got some stuff he's got to work out.
The other thing that I saw that, you had touched on last week, I think you had asked at the end of the last episode we were talking about, is Oliver actually becoming a superhero or a hero at this point? Because there was the news story on the TV, and there's more of that here, and people are saying, well, you know, he's actually a hero now. And Lance, like, just doesn't want to hear this. He goes into a state where he's like, I just got to catch this guy. And he is so focused. He really has a set of blinders on throughout the entire episode, I think.
Yeah. I think they need, I mean, this is just my opinion, and maybe they've got a ultimate goal for Detective Lance, but I think they need to start pushing him more towards the, you know, Commissioner Gordon type thing where he doesn't openly come out and
support
the Hood, but he uses him, or he's like, at least lets him get away with stuff, and he stops pursuing him because it's getting to the point where it's almost just kind of silly. It's like, look, the rest of the police station doesn't even want you to go after him anymore. You need to kind of just either let this go or work out something.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed to die down in a few episodes ago, and it hadn't been, you know, that big a deal, even though he was kind of surreptitiously, I guess, tracking him with this Arrow phone because he was working with the IT guy to, you know, help trace the calls, even though supposedly it's untraceable or whatever Oliver told him.
It felt like he was starting to work more with him, though. So.
Right, and it seemed like, you know, Oliver Queen would go and ask Detective Lance for help in that role, and then Lance would come and ask Arrow for help, you know, and do other things. And they seem to collaborate a little bit. But this episode, all of a sudden, he's ramped back up in his, you know, this fever pitch of like, oh, we got to stop. We got to stop him. And it's just kind of, it's continuing uphill at this point. And to the point where when they finally break into Vance's mansion that he's holed up in, the lawyer that he killed at the beginning, mm-hmm. Vance is that intelligent of a criminal, which is a cool criminal to see, that he actually counted how many arrows are in his quiver and then hired that many plus at least one henchman. So Oliver, you know, and the number, what magic number was 24, even though we only see Oliver take out 11 of them. So Oliver has,
but he also counted the number of the little arrows on his arm too. I can't remember what those are called, but
oh, like the flechettes or something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, so basically Oliver has used up all his arrows and he comes in and he has no arrow to take out Vance, and there's one other guy with a gun. But Lance felt, we understood that there was a mole in the station, and that's how they knew to go after Laurel. So Lance, Detective Lance, realizes that he can't ask anybody else for help. So he now feels like, okay, he's been going after the hood so hard again. Okay, now I got to actually reach out to him and say, gosh, my daughter's in trouble and you're the only one that can help me. And I'm sorry, can you come back and help us? You know, it's like, you know, he kind of tucks his tail between his legs, but this is like second or third time this has happened too. It's like, the change of heart is so rapid. I don't know.
It seems like it might be a little uncharacteristic of someone like that, you know, to so willingly jump in and either help the hood or ask for help from the hood. So I hope they'll kind of start pushing him either one way or the other. So he's not going back and forth like this. So
I did see that it was, you know, it was more that his only other daughter is in trouble, and and it seems like in previous episodes, because he's talked about Sarah, the daughter that Oliver basically got killed when his boat went down 5 years ago, Lance would probably do anything to get her back and would probably do anything to save Laurel's life, which is kind of what he's doing. So he goes in alone, and Oliver actually stops him from shooting Vance like point blank. He throws something at him that deflects the gun at the last second, so the shot goes wild. And Oliver points out to him, he goes, I'm the vigilante, you're the cop. And because he's got this kind of bloodlust, it's like someone's attacking his family and he's gonna, you know, take him down regardless of the consequences, because he's not even really thinking about what the consequences are. And then even after all that, he's driven such a wedge in between himself and Laurel that, you know, she just walks away. She's like, you know, I still respect you, I still love you, but I can't be around you. So
that's happened to me so many times on dates.
Family issues, you know. So and then the B plot line for this is they're continuing to ramp up whatever it is that Moira's doing with Malcolm Merlyn, and we actually have a name for it now. They're calling it the Undertaking. I don't know that it's a proper name, but they reference it as this undertake, you know, the undertaking that we're working on or whatever. And and that's when the hood comes in and, you know, brings his vengeance down on top of her. They still don't give you enough information to go on, except that it's something that involves the city. There's this group that Merlyn leads, which is different than his 9-to-5 business job, I guess. And
do we have a name for that group? Do we know?
Oh yeah, I have that here in my notes. It was mentioned previously before. It's I think it's Merlyn Global. The Merlyn Global Group.
Well, that's his company.
That's his company, right? Oh,
what about the name for the secret group that Moira's part of? We don't have a name for that yet.
We don't have a name for that. Yeah.
Okay.
I called it a cabal, I think, the other week, or, you know, an Illuminati kind of group. But no, there's no official name that I've seen for that, or at least heard on the show. I'm sure fans have come up with something that they're calling it.
Okay.
The Starling City Rollers, maybe? I don't know.
I like that.
Yeah.
I just picture this this poster and with you know, Malcolm Merlin in like a roller derby outfit. I don't.
There you go. Yeah, man, that's where I was going for. I think that'd be great. So, any other elements from Betrayal that you wanted to touch on? We talked about this earlier, just kind of with Slade Wilson, but the flashbacks. We got to meet Slade, who is this master swordsman and had been working with Yao Fei for a while, I guess, before he kind of went over to the other side. As far as we knew.
And you know, when you find out that he's Slade Wilson, which is who, you know, if you're the comic fans or if you, or of course, if you listen to Green Justice, you know that Slade Wilson is the name of Deathstroke.
Deathstroke.
And so, you know, my first thought when I found that out is, okay, wait a minute. The guy with the mask in the camp that was torturing Oliver.
Yes.
He's now taken off his mask and is pretending like he's this guy that's going to help Oliver. That was my first thought.
Right. Oh, but they don't they give you what, like 5 seconds to think that before they change their change your mind.
Well, and then Oliver finds a mask.
Yeah, the same mask.
The same mask. And I even looked to see if it was like the colors were on the opposite side or something like that.
Oh,
and they were the same.
No, yeah, it was. Yep.
But so, and then so then I'd say, well, maybe it is. and then he says, he kind of explains a little bit more. And so I don't know. I was wondering how, you know, back and forth like that. I didn't know if he was trying to pull a fast one on him and it was crazy. So I still don't know about this Slade Wilson, though, because what's going on? I mean, why is he working with Yao Fei? Was he where do they come from? Does this have anything to do with Robert? I don't know. What do you think?
At this point, yeah, there's not much to know about that. There is he does say, you know, Slade says he's working with the Australian SAS, which is a military organization, I guess, like the CIA or I guess like special services or special forces, I guess. And he and his partner, and he mentions his partner, but we don't get any more about that in Betrayal. I think all of that comes out in the Odyssey episode, which we'll touch on here in just a minute. So, you know, that, like you say, he points out that the mask is, you know, something like the operational equivalent of a balaclava. It's basically just what he uses to remain anonymous when he's working in his covert capacity. And it seems like this partner of his has gone rogue or, you know, whatever, and just continue to wear it.
Let's move on to the Odyssey, because some of that stuff is answered and there's even more questions, but it all has to do with that.
Well, one other thing I want to just touch on I want to point out for Malcolm Merlin, who in his offices, when Moira goes to meet with him and Diggle follows her in, and he goes and hides in like a broom closet, basically, and puts a bug on the wall so he can listen to him. Another security guard in that building, I'm assuming it's one of Malcolm's security guards, busts in and says, "Hey, what are you doing in here?" And so, you know, Diggle like hides the bug because his back's to him, and the guy's like, "Show me what's in your pocket." Okay, this guard sucks, because you've got a guy who is not supposed to be here. He's in a broom closet doing something that you don't know what. He says that he's with, you know, security for Moira Queen, but you don't know that. And then you saw him put something in his pocket, so you're going to stand there and, you know, the guy doesn't have the guard doesn't have a gun or anything. And he's like, "Show me what's in your pocket." And he lets Diggle just reach into his pocket and pull out whatever. You know, it's like, he could have just, boom, shot him right there.
Well, but I think I've discovered why the people in Starling City are such bad liars.
Why is
it's
that?
Because the other people in Starling City will pretty much believe anything you say.
Oh, well, that's, yeah. That's true. That's true. There is a lot of lying going around, and everybody does kind of mention how bad a liar everybody is. So
But he does get away with it, so.
Yeah, that's true. So, all right, well, let's move into The Odyssey, which on a very high level, just in case people have, you know, were asleep during their literature or civics classes or whatever in school, The Odyssey on its topmost level is a reference to a tale by Homer. No, see, I know what you're going for. I knew you were going to be thinking about that, so I'm going to just nip that in the bud here. Not that Homer. Homer, the, I don't even know his last name. The Greek? Homer the Greek?
Homer, yeah.
Jimmy's brother.
Smith.
Homer Smith. Anyway, and it's, but The Odyssey, in essence, is a tale of a man trying to get home to his family, which, I mean, isn't that what Oliver, and The Odyssey is like a 7-year journey. Oliver's is only a 5, so.
Oh, but there's more, right? He's still working on whatever that started on the island, so, you know, it could still be 7 years.
That's true. I mean, yeah, it's still an ongoing journey.
I'm reaching deep now, but I've never actually read The Odyssey, so.
I've seen the adaptation they did. I think it was called O Brother, Where Art Thou? That's a Coen Brothers film that was based on The Odyssey. Anyway, so besides, I don't know, do you want to talk about Yao Fei and fires, or you want to talk about Slade first?
Oh, so much. Well, let's keep talking about Slade, because that's what we ended off with here a minute ago.
So what's interesting, there's a line that Slade says here that he feels that everyone is in this life for him or herself. But he is taking the time to basically, he identifies Oliver in the previous episode as being worthy to be trained because they are going to, he needs someone to help him take down the airfield so that they can get on this plane to get off the island. And
I'm not sure why he needs somebody to help him take down the airfield because he seems perfectly capable of doing it himself.
But he explains that he needs to take out the guys and get into the radio tower, but like he couldn't be taking out the guys and getting in there because that would expose him. Because basically, you know, Oliver was being exposed going through the 10 guards or whatever. And so I think I don't know. I think Slade explains it. It's, you know, again, it's kind of I don't know if it, you know,
right,
it
but works, he still ends up taking out all the guys himself.
Right, but he needed Oliver to distract people, you know, so he could take out these other guys, you know, because, I mean, Oliver gets a gun pulled on him and he tries to, you know, beat the guy off, and then Slade just skewers him right through the back. But so Slade's got a really pessimistic outlook on people in general, and this leads to, or I think this stems from his partner, who we come to find out is named Billy Wintergreen. They were both captured because they came to the island to help out Yao Fei for something. They were investigating or, you know, sent on a mission of some kind. They get captured by Fires and his men, and Fires offers them a chance to work with him, and Billy took it. And Slade felt betrayed because, you know, he thought they were friends and he was here for the mission and everything like that. So he ended up escaping and obviously seems very bitter about this. So he thinks everyone's out for themselves. But yet, I wanted to ask you about this. He actually trains Oliver to help, you know, the escape. So, like, how is this a contradiction? Obviously, he has this pessimistic view about people, yet he is willing to help out Oliver. So, is that a contradiction, or is he got something else going on?
Well, it's a complete contradiction based on what we know about him so far. So I think there's obviously something more to Slade in this character. This is an important character, especially if he's going to turn out to be Deathstroke, I'm assuming. Yeah. But I still, why is he helping Oliver? I mean, and this goes back to the question we asked a while back about why is Yao Fei helping Oliver?
Right.
I think that might be a little more clear just because,
Yao Fei might be a good guy. He's doing stuff for other reasons. He's being manipulated. But so why is Slade helping Oliver? Does this have something to do with something we don't know about yet? Because Slade doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who would just help just to be a good person. Although he keeps doing it. I mean, he makes sure Oliver doesn't die. He keeps rescuing him. He's training him. So I don't know. Right now it feels like it is a contradiction, but one that there's probably going to be an explanation for. So.
And what Wilson doesn't really realize is that, I mean, this is Oliver is exactly this kind of person that he's describing. Oliver has always been about himself and, you know, not really caring about anybody else because he's just been well off. And there's been, you know, he's had no reason to have to be able to, you know, protect himself, look out for himself. He's always had other people around to do that for him and everything like that. And what's great is that by the end of this episode, because this was this whole episode, the Odyssey was a flip flop from what we normally see. We've been seeing just little snippets of the island for every episode, and it's mostly taking place in Starling City. Because Oliver was shot at the beginning of this one, he's mostly he's unconscious for probably 90% of the episode in the Starling City part. So it's mostly island stuff. So we really get to see a lot of training montages. We get to see them try to take down this air control tower that they've got set up. And at the end of this, Oliver realizes that, like, he actually makes a conscious decision that he will not be the person that he was anymore. And he makes a decision that, you know what, I need to do what's right regardless of what's easy. And I'm going to go rescue Yao Fei. And Slade, at this point, trusts him enough. It's like, well, I don't know if that's the right decision, but, you know, I will help you do that. So it's this is a big turning point for Oliver in the growth department, because this is probably his first biggest challenge that he's had to face on the island, besides just staying alive, I guess. Okay, so let's call it a second challenge then. And, he actually has learned.
He's kind of showed this loyalty to Yao Fei when he was being tortured by not revealing anything about him, and now you know, he's taken that a little step further with being actually more of a hero type character. You know, like, eventually we're assuming, you know, the vigilante is becoming. So this seems like his first kind of heroic act. But he has shown that loyalty to Yao Fei before, so
that's true. And it is, and as Fires points out in this episode and in other and in previous episodes, it's kind of a blind loyalty. He's like, you know, you have no reason to be trusting this man. Why do you trust him? And Oliver can't answer that. Yet, there was a statement that Oliver makes at one point because Fires said something, and Slade Wilson was like, okay, so Fires is such a, you know, bastion of truth.
Trustworthy guy, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, why, you know, like you said, everybody believes anything that they're told in Starling City, so maybe that's maybe that's like the modus operandi of the populace there.
Yeah.
So also, just as a quick note, we learned that Oliver's been on the island for 6 months at this point. And he's still, you know, he's looks like he hasn't really lost a lot of weight, so he's been doing okay, at least with Yao Fei for a while, and then a little bit on his own, and then now with Slade Wilson, who kind of takes him under his wing and offers, I'm sure you picked up on this, he offers him a choice of weapon. Slade's got a nice arsenal of different weapons to choose from, and he's like, I really like the sword myself, because that's what he uses, is really wicked-looking swords with a, I don't know, it's like a really spiky side and a cutting side. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the cutting sides for dinner, you know, and the serrated edges that are for going through your enemies, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and as you mentioned in the brief, we do find out what is up with Yao Fei. So I know we've discussed this. It was like, well, he was helping Oliver. Well, first he shoots Oliver and you're like, oh, this is a bad dude. And then he helps Oliver and saves his life. And it's like, okay, so this is a good dude. And then he runs off and leaves Oliver. And it's like, okay, this is a questionable dude. And then, oh, but look, I captured Fires and I'm going to help you out. And then they all go marching back to use fires as bait. And then Yao Fei gets captured again. And the next time Oliver sees him, he's actually working with fires. And you're like, okay, so has this guy, like, what's up with this guy? Why is he doing that? Well, we find out it's because fires is holding his daughter Shadow captive. And basically forcing him to do whatever the mercenary work is that they do on this island. Obviously, they've got supply planes flying in that are bringing either A, more people, or B, goods. We've heard about both, I guess, being dropped off by plane. Because Yao Fei proved to be loyal enough, I guess, to Fires, he lets him see his daughter for a few minutes. And she's probably, what, late teens, early 20s? Something like that. She's tied up in one of the
tents. Yeah, kind of hard to. I was thinking early 20s, somewhere around there, but.
Yeah. So, we don't find out too much except that, you know, she's being held captive. They're speaking in Chinese and we're getting subtitles. And the last thing we see in the shot with her is that she's got a big dragon tattoo on her back, which is complimentary to the comic book character.
Right.
She's got these. Very big dragon tattoo arts and stuff on her.
Did you feel like before they kind of panned around to show the back of her shoulder when she was hugging Yao Fei, right? Did you think that her face changed a little bit where mm-hmm. it looked like maybe she wasn't as distraught and upset as she was kind of leading Yao Fei to be?
Yes. Yeah, there was something. It looks like she's hiding something or she knows something that she's not sharing with him.
Yeah. Like almost like maybe she wasn't being held. Instead, she's kind of helping to manipulate him or something.
I don't know. Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I'm reading a lot into that.
Right.
It just something not quite trustworthy about her.
Right. Well, I didn't get that level of it. I got kind of like, oh God, you know, I really am not really that fond of my dad, and you know, kind of like with the whole Laurel thing. It's like my dad's put me in a position where now I'm captured. And he's coming in and he's, oh, I love you. And you know, I'm glad you're safe and all this stuff. And she's like, oh geez, for gosh sakes, please.
Maybe, but she sure was more, it seemed more calm to me. Like she was a lot more calm in the face than she was when he was looking at her and she was crying. What's going on? But
yeah, obviously there's something else going on and hopefully we'll see more of her soon. You know, I'd hate for them to tease this and then not pick it up right away, but I guess we'll see. At one point, speaking of other stuff that's going on in the camp there, Fires was talking to somebody, I believe his benefactor on a satellite phone, and you hear the
voice. Somebody that was in charge of Fires, or at least giving him orders, because that's mm-hmm. he talked to him like he was a subordinate, you know?
So, of course, my thought goes to Malcolm Merlyn in this case, and the reason I jump right to him is because of something that had happened in the previous episode with Diggle. Diggle is, I mentioned he was in the broom closet spying on Moira and Malcolm Merlyn. They were in kind of an unfinished office. And he bugs them with some little device that can hear through walls. And so Moira sounds like Moira, but Malcolm Merlyn doesn't sound like Malcolm Merlyn. It's like the voice is distorted enough because he's recording through the wall. And so that when he plays it back for Oliver, it's very clear that Moira that's the Moira voice, but we can't figure out who this other voice is. And it doesn't click, of course, that it's Merlin's, or that it's Oliver's best friend's dad, right? So it's the same kind of thing going on for this. There was enough distortion on the voice on the phone that it could be, you know, and at the point, you know, at this point now, you know, who else really, like, we don't know anybody else, so that's, of course, what I think viewers are going to be drawn to. It's like, oh, well, of course it's Merlyn.
Well, and I had the same thought that you did, that maybe it was Malcolm for a different reason, but for kind of the reasons we've talked about in the past, saying, well, you know, do they have some sort of connection to this island where Fires is? Because, you know, when we asked about, you know, Robert, if why he was in that area and if it's somehow connected to the list and the undertaking now we know or whatever. So that was my first thought, too. So what was it? Was it Merlyn?
I guess we'll have to tune in and find out. getting back to the tattoo that we saw in Shadow, what we see, I think this might be the very No, it's not the last shot in the episode because Oliver. No, maybe it is the last shot in the episode.
No, it's not. There's a reason it's not, a very important reason, but it was the last shot in the flashbacks.
Oh, it was for her.
Yeah, after they show the tattoo, that's the last flashback scene in this episode. But then Oliver wakes up.
Yeah, Oliver wakes up from his gunshot wound, and he's like, "Oh, hey, you did pretty good there." And
I like his line in that part. He goes, "Oh, I guess I didn't die."
Yeah,
cool.
Well, and Felicity proves herself quite capable. Was this the part? Oh no, I guess it was. Well, she was talking about how she wanted to puke because all the blood. She wasn't used to, you know, seeing her boss shot and all this stuff. But I guess it was because Wilson gets shot, and Oliver had to help him get the bullet out. And Wilson's like, "You did a good job. You didn't puke." And he's like, "I swallowed it." So, but when Oliver finally wakes up and he sits up, we see that. The wound is on his left shoulder, and the camera pans around to the back side of the left shoulder, and there is a dragon tattoo that looks just like the one that Shadow had.
That was the last shot in the episode.
right. And I don't recall seeing that we've seen him without his shirt on, but I can't recall if we ever saw his back. I know we saw his front, and maybe they kept that shoulder out because I want to say we would have seen his right side or something like that. So I don't.
I'm not saying the shoulder specifically, but there's been times when I've seen things on his body. I'm like, is that a tattoo? And I couldn't tell what it was, but can't recall if they've shown his left shoulder or not.
Yeah, because on the front side of his left shoulder, he's got the Bratva tattoo, the Russian mom tattoo that he shows to the guys to say, "Oh yeah, you know, I'm totally cool. Look, I got a tattoo here." So
I'm thinking about getting just in case I ever need something from the Russian mob in my city. They're not as big of a presence in my city. I think it's just one guy and he owns a deli.
You should also probably learn how to speak Russian if you're going to go that far.
That might be a good idea. I don't know any. I might be able to do the accent, but yeah.
So anyway, so Oliver now has a tattoo that's the same as the one on Yao Fei's daughter. Okay, so again, speculate what you will. There's like 3,000 more reasons to, you know, keep watching the show, I guess.
Yeah, I just hope it turns out that Oliver isn't Yao Fei's daughter, because that would really change the whole idea of the show. But
that's true. We haven't seen them both in the same place at the same time. Is that what you're getting at?
that's what I'm getting at. I don't know. See, that would be a really good secret identity right there.
Okay. Yeah, that would be really interesting. So
I think that's going to end up being something about his other, obviously, I guess, the other, you know, 5 or 4.5 years on the island. So, but somehow he gets connected with her, I would think, or whatever that dragon means.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe, soon we'll see her, playing with fire, and then maybe she'll kick a hornet's nest, because she's the girl with the dragon tattoo. So, yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
insert rim shot here.
Ba-dum ting. All right, so let's just I don't want to say briefly go over some of the references from this these two episodes, because
good references.
There were quite a few. So besides all the discussion we had about Slade Wilson, and of course there's a huge amount of backstory for that character. I mean, he's a comic book character in his own right. He's had his own series. He's starred in Teen Titans comics and stuff like that. Again, I think as we had talked about when we were talking about Deathstroke specifically, more of a Teen Titans kind of character.
Well, he's a very, very popular villain.
Yeah, and he's become more than just a villain. I mean, he's kind of that morally ambiguous gray, what do they call it? Like the Punisher, you know? It's like, he probably is a bad guy, but then
anti-hero, right? Is that what they...
Yeah, I guess so. So there's all sorts of stuff with that. we find out about Billy Wintergreen, who is his partner here in the show. And indeed, Billy is an associate of Slade Wilson in the comics, known as William Randolph Wintergreen. And they both appeared in the New Teen Titans number 2, which was also introduced Deathstroke. Actually, I don't know if they let people know that Deathstroke was Slade Wilson at that point. Oh, and I wanted to ask you, is Wintergreen actually dead? Because at the end of the Odyssey episode, Slade, you know, they fight a little bit. Slade's a little faster and manages to get in a couple extra punches and shoves a sword right through his eye. Same eye that we saw Deadshot shot in, by the way.
Well, so obviously that's no big deal, you know. You just go to, you know, the bad guy hospital and get a few stitches, you should be fine. That's just the eye, right?
Right. Well, I mean, it was a, like I said, it was a sword. It was smooth on one side and jaggy on the other side. So, right, and it was pretty deep.
I
think he got pinned to the floor.
Despite the fact that these were two very similar injuries between Deathstroke and Deadshot, I'm going to make the opposite prediction.
Okay.
With Deathstroke here. I'm going to say, I'm going to say Billy Wintergreen. I'm not going to say Deathstroke.
Okay, that's good.
I think that's where Slade's going to end up. But I believe Billy Wintergreen is dead.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I'm just going to play devil's advocate and say that we'll see him come back at some point.
All right. All right. We'll have to see.
That's probably a useless prediction right there.
I did find an interesting description of Billy Wintergreen as I was kind of researching stuff for this episode. I don't know if you saw this, but he was in the comics. You know, he was the partner of Terminator and associated with Terminator. But I saw one description that said since Deathstroke was supposed to be like the criminal version of Batman,
mm-hmm.
Wintergreen was sort of his counterpart, like Alfred.
Oh, okay.
Which I thought was an interesting interesting description of him.
I thought you were going to say Robin. So, yeah, that is kind of weird.
Yeah, so it was – because I guess he really was – at least in one of the comics mm-hmm. Versions, he was like the what would you call it? The personal assistant, the butler,
the,
I guess.
The valet, maybe?
The valet. Deathstroke the valet.
Yeah. So along with all these references to Deathstroke and Wintergreen and stuff like this, the lawyer in the betrayal episode worked for Wolfman and Perez law firm. And Marv Wolfman and George Perez were the writer and the artist that created Deathstroke and Wintergreen and the New Teen Titans. So that's a great homage right there. Again, all these kind of cool things they insert. There was reference in the betrayal episode to Oliver, or the vigilante, wanting to meet Laurel on top of the Winnick building, and that is named after Judd Winnick, who is a writer for DC for Green Arrow and also for Green Lantern. When Moira went to meet with Malcolm Merlyn for her, what she told Diggle was her she's going to go see the it was an accountant, I guess. She was going to go up to see this accountant. She goes into a room that's listed as Fauquet Lemaitre Consulting, which is actually, I was looking for that, you know, it's like, oh, wow, that's a really cool, like, French name. I wonder if that's, you know, some other character. Well, it turns out it's the set designer, Dominique Fauquet Lemaitre, on the show, so... That's pretty cool. And it was a very prominently displayed sign on the door. So, of course, she's the set designer. So she can – well, I'm assuming it's a she. It could be a male – the male Dominique. I don't know.
I wonder if anybody even knew that they put that there maybe. They just designed that as an Easter egg for themselves.
Yeah, that's true. And, that was – it took me a little while to figure that one out because I just started searching that last name and that's what I came up with. So, I mean, I'm assuming that's what it is. It doesn't relate to anything in the comics. Oliver actually makes a joke about this, in fact, he's stuck on an island and his best friend's name is Wilson, which is just like in Castaway, which we've talked about before, the references to Castaway, the Tom Hanks movie.
That was good.
Slade mentions the son that he has named Joe, and, you know, just a kind of a throwaway line. He talks about his son Joe, and Joseph Wilson is actually Slade Wilson's son in the comics, and he is a teen titan named Jericho, who is a... Is he a deaf mute, or is he just a mute? He's either deaf mute or mute. I think he may just be mute. And his power is that if you look into his eyes, his spirit or soul or whatever, something jumps into you and he can then control your body like you were a puppet, which is kind of cool. And then obviously the whole shadow, opens, like I said, opens up a whole bunch of, possibilities here. She's a major figure in the Mike Grell, story, The Longbow Hunters from the, I think it's the mid to late 80s. It was a 3-issue prestige format, which is
a classic Green Arrow story.
I was going to say, if you want to read something about Green Arrow, that is like the three, it's a 3-issue series, or you can collect it in a, it's collected in a trade paperback. That is something you should read.
That was the first, Green Arrow comic that I read from the modern era after I had read all of my dad's old 50s.
Oh, wow.
Green Arrow comics. So it was a big leap.
Yeah, I would say that's a, that is a very big leap there, because it goes from being, you know, very, I mean, you know, he was kind of goofy and very Batman-like, like we've talked about in the olden era. And this is, you know, he's, it's very raw and gritty and, you know, he's fighting street crime and taking down these bad guys, and kind of like we see in the show. I mean, there's a lot of, there are a lot of good parallels between the show and that comic.
Yeah.
So, well, that's about it for this week's episode of Green Justice.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. So please make sure you leave us feedback on iTunes, and you can contact us by email. Just send us an email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com, or make sure you visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast. Hit that like button, share the page with everybody, and make sure you post some comments on there too.
And of course, if you enjoy the podcast besides doing that, please be sure to tell your friends. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed the city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.